Hey, so before we get started on this next episode, I just want to invite everyone listening to send us an email. You can send us an email at deartaiwanpodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions you want to ask about Taiwan, want to suggest episode ideas, or just want to say hey, we'll even answer your questions in the next episode. 英文、中文都可以, Chinese or English are both okay. Very curious who's been listening so far. We look forward to hearing from you. Welcome back, everyone, to the Dear Taiwan podcast, and my name is Teacher Joseph. On our episode today, we are welcoming Teacher Matt back one more time to talk yet again about five more things we noticed when we first moved to Taiwan all those years ago. Hey, Matt, it's good to chat with you again. How are things down in Taichung?
Busy, but good.
Yeah, same here up in Taipei. Like, I'm actually currently packing to move next month, and my cat doesn't like it. And my cat's response to there being boxes everywhere is to scream at all hours of the night, screaming at the boxes. So that's kind of a new stressor in my life right now.
Baby and a screaming cat. Very fun.
So we got a few things to talk about today about the things that I first noticed when I first moved to Taiwan. We'll see if we can get through at least five of them. And starting with number 11, and this is actually kind of a bit of a boring and obvious thing to notice when you first moved to Taiwan. I wrote down 98% ethnically Han Chinese.
I didn't think it was boring. I thought it was actually quite interesting.
So, like, apparently it's actually 96%, and I just got it wrong. But anyway, nevertheless, like, coming from the U.S., like, you're from New York City, very, very diverse place. And even where I'm from, it's majority white, but there's a lot of universities. You get a lot of people of different ethnic backgrounds and national origins. And it's never going to turn ahead to see somebody of a different race or background at the supermarket at all. You know, I went to school with, again, mostly white people, but there were a few black people, a few, you know, Muslims, a few East Asians, and it was just whatever. But you don't see groups of diverse people very much going across the cities in Taiwan at all. And that was kind of one of the first things I noticed.
Yeah, I think the only time I actually noticed a large portion of diversity was when we went to that Muslim festival in Taipei in some park.
Yeah, that was pretty recently, right?
Yeah, maybe like last year or 2 years ago, something like that.
Because Taiwan does have about, I think I read, 700,000 Southeast Asian blue-collar temporary workers, migrant workers, whatever the term is, and they're from Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, and Philippines. But for a variety of reasons, you know, they're not really integrated into mainstream Taiwanese society. Like, you're not really going to see many Taiwanese hanging out with, you know, their Filipino friend or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
They're unfortunately kind of sometimes kept to live in dorms by factories or just not really given a lot of free time on their own aside from working their jobs. But even aside from that fact, like, there are foreign permanent residents here like you and I, but the domestic population is about 96% Han Chinese, 2 to 3% Aboriginal Austronesian Taiwanese. With such a strong majority, when you first arrive, you look around, you think that everyone looks kind of the same. And
that's racist.
Well, that's racist, and it's actually totally not true. And I'll get to that in a minute, but it's with one of the first things you notice. Everyone is ethnically Han Chinese that you see your first few days. But then after being here for a while, you can, if you learn the history like I did and you kind of meet a lot of people, you notice they actually do have a lot of different traits. You have like a stereotypical image of an East Asian person.
You mean like Taiwanese versus Taiwanese?
Yeah, exactly. Taiwanese versus Taiwanese. Like, I was a little bit caught off guard that I had students fully of Taiwanese heritage with curly hair in my classes my first few months. Not thinking of curly hair as a trait that's kind of common in East Asia.
Sure it's not permed?
No, I'm sure. I mean, these are young kids, and they just happen to have curly hair by their family's DNA.
I got some curly-haired six-year-olds, but they're permed hair. I said I got two or three kids with Jerry curls.
Really?
Yeah, their moms, I guess, thought it was, you know, on Schwei. So they got super curly, oiled back hair.
I've never seen that. Like, I've seen, like, what is it called? There was, like, a period of time in the 80s where that was kind of, like, a popular style, Lauren told me. But I've never actually seen that on anybody here. That's really funny.
I don't know how old their parents are, but maybe from the 80s.
Probably. Maybe it's a Tai Jung thing. I don't know.
Maybe.
But then you'll also start to notice that across the Han Chinese population, that there's also a pretty wide variety of skin complexions. Yet the people who have, you know, pale to mid-tone brown skin are all still just ethnically Han Taiwanese.
Yeah, whenever I see someone with darker skin, I assume that they're Aboriginal.
Not always, though.
Yeah, I had a student and she has, you know, pretty dark skin. And I asked her, like, oh, are you Aboriginal? And she was like, no. And I'm like, are you sure? And she was like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, okay.
So what it comes down to, actually, is that, you know, we have our stereotypical image of what an East Asian person looks like in our head. And that comes from Northern China, Korea, and Japan. But if you go back in history, the majority of Taiwanese can trace their genetic ancestry back to Southern China, where there was a wider variety of ethnicities throughout, you know, like, prehistory into, you know, modern history. And there's just kind of more genetic diversity in that part of China compared to the north. Add that with some trace DNA from, like, the Dutch colonial days and the Spanish colonial days, which were, you know, a few decades in the 1600s, and, you know, some Aboriginal intermarrying, and then you get actually a pretty diverse pool of DNA across Taiwan, despite it still being majority Han Chinese.
Interesting.
And I know that's, like, going really in depth with a lot of comments on just, like, one thing you might casually notice when you first got here, but, like, that's just how my brain works.
Yeah, I didn't think that far. I was like, oh, you got dark skin, you got light skin, okay.
So when you go back to the U.S. and you're, like, you know, on the airplane and you start to see, you know, a lot more, like, white people or black people, do you just, like, does the thought ever cross the mind, like, man, all white girls look the same?
I mean, I grew up around white people and black people. And, of course, Spanish people, because I'm Spanish.
Yep.
So I never really thought they looked the same. And then Asians kind of came into my life later on in my life during high school. So, like, maybe elementary and middle school, I didn't really have many Asian friends, like one or two tops. But then when I got to high school, all my friends were South Asian. So, like, Bangladesh, Pakistan, Indian.
Yeah.
And a couple of, like, maybe five or six Filipinos thrown in.
Okay.
So I kind of got to tell them apart, and then I got to university, and my university was, like, a huge portion of it was mainland Chinese. For some reason, my university is famous in China. I don't know why. When I went to China, I was like, oh, yeah, we're from blah, blah, blah University. And they're like, oh, I know that. I was like, what? You know that? I don't know. I can't know a single university in China. When I went to university, I met more East Asians. So then I kind of got to differentiate the faces. So that I kind of have experience with East Asians and black people and Hispanic people and white people, you know, just different stages of my life. I get exposure to different races.
Yeah, so, and I think, and then, you know, exposure to people of different cultural backgrounds and races is very important, especially for, like, you know, young kids growing up and coming of age.
In Taiwan.
They kind of don't. And, like, there's some media representation of, you know, white people and black people, especially, you know, the NBA is hugely popular. And there's some, you know, white people are, you know, largely the faces of Hollywood still. I wonder if there's, like, a market for kids' books with, you know, multiracial characters in Chinese in Taiwan. I have no idea.
When you said multiracial characters, and I was like, oh, yeah, there's a market. And then you said in Chinese, I was like, oh. And then you said in Taiwan, and
right.
I was like, ooh.
Yeah. Right. There's a market for, like, English learning books for, you know, with multiracial characters or characters of different ethnic backgrounds. But, like, I don't know, actually. Going back to, like, when you first arrived, then after you've been in Taiwan or been in Taipei or been in Taoyuan for a month or so, and then you're used to seeing mostly Han Chinese faces, and you see another white guy walk past, what's your reaction?
Well, when I first got here, I would immediately say hi.
Yep.
just because, you know, I didn't know many people and it's like a potential someone I could talk to, you know?
Yeah, and it's potentially somebody who also might be teaching English in your town.
That kind of lost its magic quickly. Like after you go to Taipei a couple times, especially if you're living in Taipei, you're going to see foreigners quite often, you know?
Yeah, just depending on where you are in Taipei. And I definitely noticed more foreign faces when I moved from Taoyuan to Taipei.
Yeah, when I was working in Neili in Taoyuan, it was, you would go weeks without seeing another foreigner, you know? Unless you work with them with your friend, you know, and you scheduled something.
Yeah.
Even now, like when I'm walking with my girlfriend and like, if we go to like, you know, a bar or something or a Western restaurant, I would expect to see a foreigner. But if we're just out about on the town and I see a foreigner walk by, I was like, oh, look, there's a foreigner, you know?
Yeah.
I like point it out and like, oh, that's, you don't see that every day, you know? They're not as common down here, I think.
No, man. Like Taichung's definitely an up-and-coming city in a lot of ways, but like there's not a whole wide range of foreign residents doing a lot of different things there aside from owning restaurants and teaching English or with Southeast Asians, you know, working in factories or elderly care. I wonder if like if what we kind of, I don't want to say went through, but like what crossed our minds, you know, coming to Taiwan and seeing, you know, 96-98% ethnically Han Chinese majority people walking around. I wonder if that's how like white people from like the sticks feel when they go to like LA or whatever.
Yeah. One of my coworkers slash friend, he lived in like rural Pennsylvania, like white trash, redneck, rural Pennsylvania.
Once you go up in the hills in Pennsylvania, you're in the middle of nowhere. You're not. Yeah. Pennsylvania is like that.
But he's ethnically South Korean and he was adopted by a German family.
Okay. So that there was
so like stuff. He was the only Asian kid for a long way, you know?
Yeah.
So like he said growing up, it was either like, oh shit, you're Asian, let's be friends. I want to be the guy that has the Asian friend. Or it was like, you're Asian, what the fuck's wrong with your eyes? Like, why are you different than me, you know? He said there was no in between. It was only those two extremes.
So there really was a lot of bigotry.
Oh yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
One more thing to say about this is like, by and large, you know, depending on your ethnic background, if you're obviously come across as not Taiwanese, you don't get like bigoted comments or bigoted attacks much here at all. Like, again, there's still some prejudice against Southeast Asian workers, but I don't know or have heard of any instances of like, you know, in the U.S. people are doing these racist, violent attacks against Asians thinking they brought COVID there. There's not that at all in Taiwan, as far as I know. And I try to keep up to date on a lot of different domestic news sources. People kind of also just keep to themselves sometimes.
Yeah, I haven't noticed that violent racism that you'll face in America. But a lot of my Black coworkers, they've complained of racism in Taiwan. I think it's largely just ignorance. You know, they don't know that, you know, not to stare at somebody and then not to ask questions about their hair and shit like that.
Yeah.
It's like a young kid seeing a Black person for the first time, except they're 35, you know?
Yeah. That's kind of true. Yeah, man, like teaching English to elementary school kids in Zhongli, you know, fresh off the airplane in 2012, those kids, and this is actually in the list later on, those kids were obsessed with my arm hair. At first it was cute, and then it got really, really effing annoying. Yeah, that I feel like crap. I feel like that they're, you know, not seeing me as a human because they just go, Teacher Joseph, and just grab my arm and just like vigorously rub it. I'm like, what the heck? Yeah, it feels a bit unnerving. But I mean, those are kids, so.
Yeah, it's forgivable when they're six, you know?
Yeah, well, these were 10-year-olds, but still. Okay, so I was quite surprised when I moved here to learn that there's not just one majority language here. There's as number 12, two languages, Mandarin and Taiwanese, period. Actually, comma, more than two. I didn't really realize that some countries are organized this way where there's a majority governing language but also half the population speaks a different language, that being Taiwanese. So Mandarin and Taiwanese are both
India.
Chinese. Sorry, what?
India is like that. The official language for like government, governmental use is Hindi, but like most regions have their own language, not Hindi being the main one.
I knew that about post-colonial countries, but Taiwan isn't really post-colonial. Not in the same way. It was never really colonized by a Western power. So, like, borders weren't randomly drawn up by a Western power to lump people of different language groups all together.
Like, me growing up, New York is so diverse that if you heard another language out on the street, it was just like, oh, yeah, that's just someone I don't understand, you know? Like, you hear Russian, Italian, Albanian, you know, Hebrew, Chinese, or Cantonese, probably.
But still, you would associate Spanish, people speaking other languages with like an immigrant background, whereas the vast majority of Taiwanese speak both languages and can kind of code switch here and there depending on the context. If they're speaking to their elders, they can switch to Taiwanese or Hakka in some areas, and they can switch to Mandarin if they're, you know, dealing with anything kind of any kind of official business or dealing with people in the north. And I thought it was interesting how, like, my mother-in-law switches mid-sentence all the time. Half the time, I don't understand what she's saying because I can only pick out a few words, because then she switches with some Taiwanese words mid-sentence. And I remember at Hess training, like, being to learn some Taiwanese to really impress the Taiwanese public. Like, learn to say paisei, which means I'm sorry or excuse me, you know. Learn li he, which is my attempt at pronouncing hello in Taiwanese. And I didn't expect that when I got here, because I only knew of Taiwan as, like, you know, a Chinese-speaking country.
My girlfriend's parents, they do very similar to your mother-in-law. Like, they'll speak mainly Taiwanese, and then either my girlfriend or her sisters will translate into either Chinese or English so I can understand.
Yep. So what's really funny to see when I'm visiting the family is that, like, my wife's mom will be speaking to older relatives, or like there's like a communal conversation, and all the elders will be speaking in Taiwanese, and all the people, you know, middle aged to younger, will answer back in Mandarin.
Yeah, my girlfriend does that.
Yeah, it's odd, except that it works, you know.
Yeah, because even though they speak Taiwanese at home, they still went to school in Mandarin, you know.
Yeah, so and up until like the 80s or 90s, it was like somewhat forbidden to speak Taiwanese or Hakka in like official settings at schools or, you know, post offices or whatever, during the martial law eras.
So
it's good that Taiwanese is being kept alive. But it's just, I mean, it was one thing I noticed, like, that there's two languages, and there's also 16 Aboriginal languages that you can, you know, visit their towns and see street signs posted in their native languages as well. That, you know,
I had a set of twins when I worked at Hess in Taichung. I had a set of twins. They were Bunun.
Cool.
And they could speak Bunun and they could speak Chinese, and then they were learning English. I don't know if they could speak Taiwanese, but I'm assuming they learned it in elementary school as well, like everybody else. So they had potentially four languages.
I really hope that my daughter spends a lot of time with her grandma and can pick up some Taiwanese, because I think it's like somebody told me that, like, Mandarin is far more like the official rigid language, whereas Taiwanese is like the poetic cultural language. I don't know how really true that is, but that's what somebody told me. And like, if Taiwanese has a lot more cultural nuance in daily conversation, it's really important to learn.
I don't really see many kids with Taiwanese as their first language anymore. You know, I think it's mostly switching over, at least in my city. Down south, maybe it's different, but at least where I am, I see Chinese first and then Taiwanese as definite secondary. Most of the time, just something you learn at school, like a language class at school, and sometimes something to talk with your grandma in, but much less.
I've seen language distribution maps where, like, what is it? Taipei, Taoyuan, Hualien, Taidong, and then downtown Taichung are majority Mandarin speaking. You know, Hsinchu, Miaoli are mixed Mandarin and Hakka, depending on the township. But then you got, like, Ilan, And then all the area of the country south of Taichung, you know, what, Jiayi, Tainan, Kaohsiung, Jianghua, all those are majority Taiwanese speaking. Now, that doesn't reflect the younger generation. That reflects, you know, the people as a whole. So there is still an issue with young people learning Taiwanese. I don't want to say issue, but you know what I mean? Like, there's a concern that they might not retain it to fluency. But yeah, it depends on where you go.
Yeah, I would say maybe only like 20% of the students I teach are fluent in Taiwanese. They can all make sentences and, you know, do like that, but
yeah,
to the extent of learning at a you know, an hour a week or whatever they do at Chinese school.
Sure, yeah, and they probably like know it colloquially, but they can't, you know, express their own thoughts fluently in Taiwanese. I would say at my school, 0% of kids learn Taiwanese because it's Taipei. There's a lot of, you know, international reach, or, you know, family members from overseas, and there's people who whose families came over with Chiang Kai-shek and made a lot of money setting up factories in China, and, like, you know, it's just it's a Taipei thing, you know. Then you drive over to Pingxi and it's like, oh, they speak Taiwanese in Pingxi, you know. Yeah,
they don't study it in the Chinese schools over there. By you?
They definitely do, but it would be later. It wouldn't be yet. My students say that, like, you know, they have all their English classes and all their Chinese classes, and they can take, like, Japanese or Korean as their club class, which is, like, once a week. But eventually they do have to learn Taiwanese by government standard in terms of the curriculum. I don't know when it is, though. All right, number 13 on my list that I noticed when I first got to Taiwan is that people give and receive things with two hands. And this is one thing you'll really notice, especially when you're, like, you know, buying something at 7-Eleven. The clerk will reach out for your money with two hands. And this goes beyond cash, whether or not you're paying for something or giving someone some money. This goes for business cards. This goes for receipts. This goes for red envelopes, the Chinese New Year. Anything of value, it's just a polite thing to do to give and receive it with two hands. And that's just one thing I noticed. I think it's actually kind of nice.
Yeah, I think when they're trying to stress their politeness, they'll do it. Yeah. But a lot of times, like, you're just buying coffee at 7-Eleven or something, they're just like, oh, here's your receipt. They just kind of, like, you know, give it to you with one hand, like, kind of more relaxed about it.
It's like, it's not every time, but it's definitely pretty.
Yeah. If you go to, like, a nicer restaurant, even, like, a regular restaurant, they'll give you the receipt and money. Yeah. And change.
Especially if it's, like, if it's somebody you don't really know, if they're in service, or if it's, like, somebody you're just meeting for the first time, they'll definitely give and receive a whole host of things with two hands as a sign of politeness. Bowing is not really a huge thing in Taiwan. That's only if, like, a politician is apologizing and in disgrace. But yeah, that is the kind of traditional polite thing. To give and receive things with two hands.
Yeah, I only see it when people are trying to be polite. Yeah.
But, like, we don't do it in the West, like, at all, really, unless it's, like, jewelry or whatever, you know?
But nowadays, like, I've gotten accustomed to it. So when I'm trying to be polite or someone is polite to me, then I'll use two hands and
yeah, give it
like that, you know?
No, like
if I go, West, like, to a fancy restaurant and I feel out of place, yeah, I'll pay with two hands.
Yeah, I definitely do it in Taiwan, but, like, I would think that in the U.S., depending on who it is, if you're, like, giving someone some money and using two hands to hold it, they might think you're being polite, or they might think that you don't want to let go of it. That, like, you're, like, maybe reluctantly giving it to them. I don't know. This is the way my mind thinks, you know. All right, number 14 on the list. I wrote down quite excitedly, no open container laws, drink on the sidewalk.
Yeah, because, man, I was nervous as hell when I came here.
Yeah, it was definitely.
I think it was with you. Like,
probably, yeah.
I think because it was the first time we went to trivia night, and we were walking from Zhongli Hess, I think, or around that area.
Yeah.
And you had, like, a banana beer or something. And I was like, oh shit,
God, yeah,
on the street or something. And someone else had, like, a Taiwan beer. And I was like, oh, we can get fucking arrested or some shit.
Yeah. And I was very surprised because I was here, like, 9 months or so before you got here. Yeah, it took me by surprise. And I wasn't used to it at first. That, like, well, not only that, but they don't card you when you buy things. Like, No one checks anything at all. Like,
I've never been
For the record, for our listeners, the drinking age in Taiwan is 18. And by and large, younger people in Taiwan, especially 18-year-olds, just kind of don't drink. People don't develop that interest or habit until a bit later in their, you know, as they kind of mature and come of age. So, like, while, yes, an 18-year-old in high school could legally go into a store in their school uniform and buy beer, and the clerk might ask for ID, that could happen. That just kind of doesn't really happen. So anybody who is going into, whether it's a 7-Eleven or, like, you know, a supermarket and buying beer, they're probably already a college graduate, or at least, you know, like,
I would say senior even older than that.
And, like, Taiwanese just kind of don't drink as much as we do in the States, as far as I can perceive. So public drunkenness is not really a big social concern either.
Yeah, not really at all.
Except for, you know, us drunk white folk at the Riverside bars in Taipei on the weekends or whatever. I'm kind of joking there, but kind of not.
Yeah, Taiwan too. I mean, Taichung too. Like, whenever I drive past a bar, it's always the foreigners that are drunk and loud, not Taiwanese.
Yeah. And it's like the drinking culture in Taiwan largely revolves around older men drinking whiskey with, you know, their fellow blue-collar employed coworkers or whatever. Like, there's definitely a whiskey and kalyan culture from back in the day. But and it's always paired with food. Like, you never see someone just, like, well, you rarely see someone just drinking kalyan by themselves or, like, by itself. It's always, like, with a meal, which is, I think, almost in a way kind of better, actually. But I wonder if Taiwan doesn't have a law against open container laws because they just never thought to make it or never thought about it.
Honestly, I'm not sure why America has an open container law.
Oh, you know, Christianity, prohibition, all that. We have an interesting history with religion and alcohol. Like, and I think I read that, like, in some county in Kentucky where they actually produce, like, Jack Daniels or Jim Beam, they legally can't even sell it in the same county for whatever dumb old law, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There's, like, does an open container law apply to, like, a bottle of cola or something? Like, can you get a ticket for drinking Pepsi or some shit? Like, what?
No, you can...
Is it only for alcohol?
It's only for alcohol, and if the police stop you, and this is New York State, if the police stop you and they don't have reasonable cause by sight that you're holding something with alcohol in it, they can't, like, take it from you and smell it. They couldn't write you up unless they see clearly that you're holding an alcohol container. And I guess in theory,
paper bags.
Paper bags. In theory, if you were to take an old beer bottle, fill it with water, and walk around, you would be breaking the law, even though there's no alcohol in your possession at the time, in theory. Now, that's probably, like, the dumbest thing you could do, but that's, anyway, just to make the point.
Oh, I don't miss America.
Yes. So one mild effect of open container or lack of open container laws in Taiwan and being allowed to drink on the sidewalk. When the Pokemon Go craze hit, I would very often go for Pokemon Go beer walks and just it's the weekend or whatever. I want to go and get Hitmontop or whatever, which Pokemon I'm missing. And I'm going to, like, you know, go from 7-Eleven to 7-Eleven when they have their seasonal beers and get a beer and walk around and try and catch Pokemon. And it was a lot of fun. I know this sounds kind of depressing in a way, but, like, it was a lot of fun.
Were you alone when you did it, or?
Sometimes I was with, you know, coworkers, or, you know, our friend Hannah was big into Pokemon Go for a while, and then you just it's like a social activity with beer, and you're walking around.
I think if you're doing it with somebody, then it sounds interesting. You know, at least interesting. You can talk to somebody as you're walking around aimlessly.
Or even just, like, if you don't want to go to the bar and spend a lot of money, you can just get some cold beer and go to the park. With the exceptions of, like, children's parks, and that's they have different laws about that. Like, you can just drink in the park and no one's going to care. I mean, maybe some people would kind of give you a snide look, but it's not illegal.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the thrill of just drinking on the sidewalk or walking around with a beer kind of stayed with me for like, you know, a year or two. And then I kind of, I don't want to say that I forgot about it going back to the States, but then it was weird that people didn't do that in the States when I would go back on visits.
I mean, I don't like to do it in Taiwan, and I never really tried to do it outside of university in America.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, America, like, you're walking home from a party and it's like maybe, you know, a mile or 2 kilometers from your own house because you're living on campus too. So,
yeah,
you know, bring your beer with you. You can walk on the streets. You got to watch out for cops. That happened, you know, but in Taiwan, like, I never really felt comfortable walking around with a beer outside.
Really?
Even though I know it was legal, I was just like, felt trashy doing it, you know?
Sure, you don't want to be, you don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, I don't want to give foreigners a worse name than they already have, you know?
I guess that's a fair point. Like, I would never do it in a neighborhood around where I work. Like, for example. Yeah, that is a fair point. Like it's a novelty that it's legal to do so, but only a certain kind of person, namely me as a recent college graduate, would want to do it.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of sidewalks, here's number 15. Weird, uneven sidewalks.
Super uneven. Like, I tripped on one today.
Holy crap. Especially in Zhongli and Taoyuan, like, the sidewalk game in the city is just terrible. Like, we should explain for the listeners, like, most older buildings in Taiwan in downtown areas have the sidewalk built as kind of like an arcade sidewalk where, like, you're basically walking through the first floor of the building with the door to the store or whatever to your, let's say, left, the road to your right, and then above you is a ceiling, though you're kind of open air. And I call them arcade sidewalks because it's kind of like, I guess, some how buildings in ancient Rome were. And as a result, the sidewalk's gradient or level is to the building that it's with. And so then you get like weird concrete joints or steps between every second building. And you might be walking through people's scooters parked or, you know, tables on the sidewalk that are connected to the restaurant they're with, or like mannequins displaying clothes. It's really not
an efficient kitchen.
Yeah. Actually, later on, that was one thing I noticed, like restaurants' kitchens being out front. But yeah. Walking through a restaurant's kitchen just because you're on the sidewalk. Have you ever like just got in a jam and tripped over something?
Well, today I was taking out the trash. Me and my girlfriend went to go chase the garbage truck. And like I was holding a pretty big box in front of me, so I couldn't really see what was coming clearly. So I knew there was a step there, but I didn't know how high it was. And I guessed wrong. And I kind of stumbled.
Did you drop your box of garbage?
No, I didn't drop my box of garbage. And I didn't fall either. I just stumbled a bit. Yeah. But, you know, I think I heard that each property owner is responsible for the sidewalk in front of their house or like under their second floor. And so if they want to renovate it to be higher or fancier, they can do that. They, you know, it's their property, so they can do whatever the fuck they want.
Yep.
That's why you have like kind of, what's the right word for it?
Like different materials on the sidewalk themselves?
Yeah. So this place will be, you know, concrete. This place will be tiled. This place will be, you know, wood. It's like, it's all different and they're all different levels.
It is not pedestrian friendly. I'm learning this the hard way, put stroller. It is impossible to not just end up in the road with scooters, buses, cars, walking around Taoyuan, pushing a stroller, because even if I can step around something, I can't push a stroller around, let's say, like the space between a scooter and the store's door or whatever. It clearly is just kind of like slapdash constructed together, and nobody thought about like, oh, we gotta have a space for pedestrians when they built these neighborhoods.
Yeah, nobody thought about that at all. It's like they built it before cars existed, and they're like, oh,
and they probably did
in the street, you know.
if you go back to the 70s, only the rich could have really afford cars in the country. So I think a lot of older cities, again, like Taoyuan or Zhongli, or like even some places in Taipei, like Wanhua or Dahong districts, they were laid out before cars were a big deal.
Yeah.
And thusly, like, it's a problem.
I think I live, right now I live on one of the more popular streets in Taichung. And yep. It's still bumpy as fuck.
And one thing that kind of bothers me is, like, there's not much of a push in a lot of places to even add sidewalks after the fact.
Okay.
Like, surely, like, adding sidewalks in some places would narrow the roads and that would kind of gum up traffic. But not in every place. And there's plenty of places in Taichung where I'm like, there could easily be a sidewalk here. They could easily take out this, you know, like, third or fourth lane and just make it a sidewalk, but they just don't.
Yeah. I felt like that in Taipei, but actually, no. In Taipei, they had sidewalks usually. If they had, like, a big road like that, they would have sidewalks.
Yeah, Taipei is actually the only place I've been to in Taiwan where it's kind of been okay. And again, not every part of the city. Like, Wanhua and Datong are a bit different, but, like, most places in Taipei, they've done an okay job adding sidewalks.
I feel like Taichung in the city proper has most of it is covered in sidewalks. But if you go to like a district that's on like the outskirts, then you're of course not gonna find it, you know.
I remember walking around the place for like that jeweler Yejia has her shop.
Yeah.
Nearby like Xiangshang Road, and there's nothing.
Oh yeah, that's
there's
nothing.
No sidewalk. Really, but it's like it's still downtown.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's kind of close to where I live.
Oh, cool. So I guess we're going to buy jewelry and pizza next time we visit.
Yeah.
So for about 6 months, I lived in Yonghe, a really, really crowded area, and you know, Taipei, New Taipei City. And my apartment was about maybe a 5 to 7 minute walk from Dingxi MRT station. And it was the same layout of sidewalk with, you know, that arcade style and mannequin displays and restaurant tables in the way. Shops would have additional shelves between the pedestrian space and the road. And I got to say, compared to places in Zhongli, they did an okay job keeping it clear for pedestrians. But I walk fast and old ladies don't. And when there's just not enough space to get around the person in front of you because the sidewalk is so congested, I'm just like, all right, screw it. I'm walking in the road.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even this old lady's fault. It's the shelves of the bookstore that have additional merchandise kind of on the sidewalk. It's the other person selling, like, you know, diguazhou or whatever the heck on the sidewalk as well in my way. It's the person passing out flyers to everybody entering the MRT. I'm like, you're in my way. You're on the sidewalk. I don't get it. Let me walk.
Yeah, usually like the vendors or the shop owners, they'll have their wares on that walking path, you know?
Yeah. And like, and when you're leaving your apartment and you're running late to go teach a class a few MRT stations away, like you're going to be hustling. And the last thing you want is like, if someone's in your way, it's really going to stress you out. Anything else about sidewalks, Matt?
I don't know. I'm all for them.
I think the last thing I can say about it is oftentimes the tile material can be slippery. And if someone has recently mopped, you are going to fall. You are going to slip and fall.
And forget about if you're driving your scooter on that shit. Oh, my God.
Yep.
I remember one day I was driving on like a super rainy day, like during plum rain season in Taipei. And I pulled over to get out of the downpour that was happening. And my scooter, of course, was wet. I was super soaking wet. And the tile that happened to be in front of that shop was like slicker than ice. And my scooter fell like 3 different times. And I tried to put out my leg to stop myself from falling. And then my leg slipped too. And I was like, Jesus, like, how am I going to leave here? You know, like,
So this is like, so you're falling over like repeatedly as if it's like some kind of slapstick Looney Tunes scooter parking story.
But more scary and more dangerous. Scooters are heavy.
I wonder if people put down slick tile because it's easier to clean or because it's like looks nicer. But yeah, like it also might be related to the fact that a lot of Taiwanese really kind of drag their feet and shuffle their feet when they walk. They don't you know, pick up their feet the way we're kind of like scolded by our parents to do so in the West. Because if you do that, you might just slip and tumble on the tile.
Huh. I never thought about that.
Again, I'm just always thinking about these things.
I always sneer at my Taiwanese coworker because she like drags her feet everywhere. And I'm like, oh, so it looks like bad, you know? Like if I can hear you coming from like 30 feet away. Just like shh, yeah. Shh, shh, shh. And you slide your slippers on the floor.
Yeah. But like, maybe she doesn't slip and fall on tiles like I did before.
True. Yeah. I slip and fall on tiles too.
I'm trying to think if there's actually like a good thing about traditional Taiwanese sidewalks to mention. Like we've complained about them plenty. And like I guess that like you can quickly browse store wares for sale.
I do enjoy that.
Yeah. I also do enjoy it too. I guess that like a jaunt through the city kind of almost more fun, but it's not friendly to like any kind of mobility impaired accessibility. Like you just
if you're in a wheelchair, you're fucked.
I can't imagine, like, because I'm pushing a stroller and I'm already struggling. I can't imagine if I was bound to a wheelchair, like, dealing with, I'd just be in the road.
Yeah, my coworker, when he had his kid and he would walk around the neighborhood in the wheelchair, he would just complain endlessly. You know, he'd come back the next day at work and he would just, you know, complain about, you know, this car parking in the crossing, like the zebra walk. And then he'd complain about, you know, no space on the sidewalks or no sidewalks at all. Or like being too skinny.
I don't know if we've mentioned this so clearly, but oftentimes sidewalks just turn into scooter parking.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, depending on the owner of the building, they might park their own scooters there. The store might allow, you know, patrons to park their scooters there if they're buying something quick. Yeah. Or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, just that it kind of shows off what the shop is trying to sell. And it kind of gives them more room. So it turns like a small kind of cube space inside and out, you know?
Yeah. It I assume also in the days before air conditioning was very common, it was comfortable to, you know, set up tables outside a restaurant on a hot day on the sidewalk and have fans out there. So that way it wouldn't get so muggy on the inside of a restaurant, maybe not.
A lot of places like that, they just have like open doors, you know?
Yeah.
Like when they close, they have that metal gate that comes down. And then when they open that metal gate, it's just kind of open.
Yeah, because if you're not going to pay for air conditioning or if the building doesn't have it, airflow is the next best solution.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Like there's two breakfast shops actually up the road from me. They're just kind of missing a wall of the building, and they put a bunch of fans inside, and they don't have AC. You know.
Okay. I mean, whatever floats their boat.
It's hot as fuck, but it's okay.
Yeah. I mean, all those grandma and grandpas are used to the heat anyway. Well, that about wraps up everything we have to say about sidewalks, Matt. We're going to close it at 5 this episode. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, especially as the weather gets cooler and it's rainy as heck up in Taipei around Chinese New Year, I'm going to try and record a bunch over the holiday because what else is there to do?
Yeah, I'm down. I got nothing to do. I said I have to do some stuff with my in-laws, but, you know, I'll be around you.
Yeah. My winter break is like almost 3 weeks.
Wow, mine is 1 week.
Only 1 week?
Yeah, then I gotta do camps.
Oh, see, we don't have any camps to do, at least not this year.
I gotta do an elementary camp, and I gotta do a high school camp.
They really work you to the bone, man.
Yeah, they do.
Anyway, yeah, thanks again for coming on, and I hope that you guys adjust well to the new apartment, and get a cat.
Eh, I don't know, man. If I'm home more, then maybe I'll think about it, but once I change jobs one day...
You'll open up your own business that can be a craft beer / ESL company.
No, craft beer / cat cafe.
Craft beer / cat cafe. That sounds better. Yes.
Sounds crazy messy.
Yeah.
Thanks again for joining us on the Dear Taiwan podcast as Teacher Matt and I talked about the people of Taiwan, languages of Taiwan, sidewalks of Taiwan, polite customs, and drinking laws. And again, if you would like to send us an email, please feel free to do so at deartaiwanpodcast@gmail.com. Hope you can tune in next time.